find all the case information you need faster. Smart litigators rely on Bloomberg Law's broad litigation news coverage and our market-leading dockets. Now with AI-driven search and analytics, customized alerts, and expansive state court coverage. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com for everything you need to win.
Welcome to Cases and Controversies, a Supreme Court podcast by Bloomberg Law. I'm Kimberly Robinson.
And I'm Lydia Wheeler. It's been a busy week.
Whew.
Yeah, you're telling me. The court heard arguments in two free speech cases Monday. The first one was the Biden administration appealing lower court rulings that restricted its ability to contact social media companies, basically in an effort to curb misinformation online. And in the second, the NRA was asking the justices to revive its lawsuit against a New York State regulator that it says tried to stop banks and insurers from basically doing business with the gun rights group. But first, let's talk about what the court did in Texas on Tuesday in the battle between the Biden administration and Texas over immigration. So, Kimberly, tell us what was going on with that.
How much time do you have, Lydia?
All afternoon for you.
So it's a bit of a roller coaster, but it starts with a Texas law known as SB 4. And the measure is Texas Governor Greg Abbott's response to what he sees as the Biden administration's failure to deal with a crisis on the southern border. So SB 4 makes it a state crime to illegally enter the U.S. through Texas, and it allows state court judges to effectively order undocumented immigrants removed from the country. And then it's up to Texas law enforcement agents to carry out those deportations. Now, the Biden administration says that the law encroaches on the federal government's exclusive authority to carry out immigration laws. But Texas is really making this novel claim that says that the Constitution allows states to defend themselves when they are, quote, actually invaded, and that that should trump the Supreme Court's precedent that has really given a robust right for the federal government exclusively to decide immigration law. So a federal district judge stopped the law from going into effect while the Biden administration challenged the law. And while that worked through the courts, and Texas appealed to the Fifth Circuit.
But the Fifth Circuit did something pretty unusual, right?
Yeah, the Fifth Circuit was, Fifth Circuiting. And instead of deciding on the merits, whether the law should or shouldn't go into effect, the court instead issued a so-called administrative stay. And so, as I said, this is not a determination on the merits, but instead a temporary order intending to pause things while the appeal sort of works its way through the court.
So in comes the Supreme Court, right?
In comes the Supreme Court. So the Biden administration asked the justices to again block the law from going into effect. And in a series of new administrative stays, Justice Samuel Alito, the circuit justice for emergency applications out of Texas, did pause the implementation of the law.
But not for long.
But then Tuesday. So here we're finally getting to what actually happened. On Tuesday, without any opinion explaining why, a 6-3 court denied the Biden administration's request, which seemed to greenlight the law. But Justice Amy Coney Barrett, joined by Justice Brett Kavanaugh, wrote a concurring opinion. And in it, she said that the Supreme Court really shouldn't be involved in these administrative stays. It's really unwise, she said, for the court to be inviting emergency litigation at such a preliminary step. But she went further to seemingly chide the Fifth Circuit for its increasing use of these administrative stays. And Barrett said that she expected the Fifth Circuit to act, quote, promptly, and said that the Supreme Court might be forced to get involved if, you know, the Fifth Circuit doesn't get its act together. I'm paraphrasing.
But that wasn't the end of it. You know, the Fifth Circuit then responded and had its own hearing.
Right. It got the message that it needed to act promptly. So within hours of the Supreme Court's order, the Fifth Circuit had not only ordered a hearing for the very next morning, RIP those lawyers, but it eventually lifted the administrative stay that allowed SB 4 to go into effect. So that's where things stand right now. But, you know, I'd certainly expect to see this case wind back up at the court, especially because, you know, the sort of claims that Texas is making really seems designed to overturn Supreme Court precedent. And that, of course, is something only the justices can do.
Yeah, quite the whiplash there. But we'll keep an eye on all of that as it progresses through the lower courts. But let's now get back to those First Amendment cases I talked about at the top of the episode. Let's start with the social media case. What started the dispute in Murthy versus Missouri?
Right. So it started really in the very early days of the Biden administration as it sought to tackle COVID disinformation online. So here, two states, Missouri and Louisiana, and some social media users who were blocked say that the administration put extraordinary pressure on social media sites like Facebook and then Twitter to remove accounts that spread false information about vaccines and other public health issues. And they say that pressure extended to other things like disinformation over the 2022 midterm elections. And while these states agree that the government itself has a right to speak on matters of public importance, they say that the government went too far and essentially took over the platforms. And so they say that when the social media companies took down these posts or deplatformed certain users, it was really government censorship. So here's Jones Day lawyer J. Benjamin Aguinaga, who is challenging the Biden administration's actions.
And the government's levers of pressure are anathema to the First Amendment. Behind closed doors, the government badgers the platforms 24/7. It abuses them with profanity. It warns that the highest levels of the White House are concerned. It ominously says that the White House is considering its options. And it accuses platforms both of playing total Calvin ball and of hiding the ball, all to get the platforms to censor more speech. Under this onslaught, the platforms routinely cave.
So this case, like the immigration one, comes out of the Fifth Circuit, which agreed with the challengers that the Biden administration went a little too far. But what was the reception from the justices?
Well, you know, oral arguments happened on March 18th, and afterward, it really seemed unlikely to me that the Fifth Circuit's opinion is going to stand. And we've really seen the Supreme Court really pull back on some of the most conservative rulings from the Fifth Circuit, so this seems like another one. You know, there was some real skepticism from many of the justices that the Biden administration's efforts were over the line. So here's Justice Kavanaugh, who, you know, for a long time worked in the White House.
Oh, that's right.
Saying it's really not all that unusual for government officials to complain about media coverage.
Yeah. You're speaking on behalf of the United States. Again, my experience is the United States in all its manifestations has regular communications with the media to talk about things they don't like or don't want to see or complaining about factual inaccuracies.
Yeah, I hear you, Justice Kavanaugh. And then Justice Kagan, who also had experience working in the White House, seemed to agree.
Like Justice Kavanaugh, I've had some experience encouraging press to suppress their own speech. You just wrote a bad editorial. Here are the five reasons you shouldn't write another one. You just wrote a story that's filled with factual errors. Here are the 10 reasons why you shouldn't do that again. I mean, this happens literally thousands of times a day in the federal government.
Chief Justice Roberts, though, wanted to make it really clear to all of us that even though he's an alum of the White House, too, he's never done anything like that.
I was just going to say, first, I have no experience coercing anybody.
So what's behind the justices' concerns here? I mean, what really are they worried about?
Well, it's really a concern about hamstringing the government. So there are all sorts of perfectly good reasons why a government official might want to contact social media sites. So here's Justice Barrett talking about one of those reasons.
Let me just ask you then, let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say that you get doxxed, and so do numerous other members in Louisiana state government. You're doxxed, and somebody's posting online about how people should really rally and do something about this. People should rally and you should be harmed, okay? The FBI sees these posts and calls the social media outlet, like X, Facebook, whatever, and says, we really encourage you to take these down because these are significantly threatening and we see some people may be responding to them.
Well, that's interesting coming from Justice Barrett, who has seen protests at her home following her vote to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Exactly. So maybe she's like, hey, we don't want to stop them from doing this.
So, Kimberly, were there any justices who actually seemed sympathetic to the arguments that the states were making here or no?
Yeah. And so I think one important thing to note is that the court back in October actually put the Fifth Circuit's ruling on hold. And at that time, three justices, Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, actually dissented from that move, and they were pretty critical of the government's efforts here. And those same justices seemed skeptical again on Monday during arguments. Justice Alito said the Biden administration was treating these social media companies basically as subordinates, and he questioned whether we tolerate that same kind of interaction with legacy news sites.
And so I thought, you know, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket, and it's, to mix my metaphors, and it's got these big clubs available to it. And so it's treating Facebook and these other platforms like they're subordinates. Would you do that to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press?
And he was particularly concerned with the anger that some Biden administration officials expressed to these social media companies. There was a lot about some interactions where they said that the social media sites were basically killing people. There was some profanity. So Alito suggested that if this was the way things really go down, that maybe the court itself should take a different tact with the Supreme Court press corps.
Well, I don't know whether our public information officer is here today, but maybe she should take a note about this. So whenever they write something that we don't like, she can call them up and curse them out and say, why don't we be partners? We're on the same team. Why don't you show us what you're going to write beforehand? We'll edit it for you, make sure it's accurate.
Interesting.
It was really interesting because, you know, Justice Alito during the arguments kept like pointing over to us and being like, you know, hey, what if we treated them badly? And we're like, But again, Justice Kavanaugh was there to say that in his experience, that happens all the time with print media.
I'd experienced government press people throughout the federal government who regularly call up the media and berate them.
And that social media case wasn't the only free speech fight the court heard on Monday. As I mentioned earlier, the NRA urged the justices to revive a lawsuit against Maria Vullo, the former head of New York's Department of Financial Services. So the gun rights group says that Vullo used the power of her office to coerce banks and insurance companies into cutting ties with the gun rights group because she disagreed with its political speech. And NRA said that that's a violation of the First Amendment.
So it seems like the claims here are pretty similar to those that we were talking about in the social media case. Here, government officials are going too far and taking actions that amounted to censorship. Is that the right way to look at these cases?
Yeah, I think so. And the similarities between the two cases weren't lost on some of the justices, especially Chief Justice John Roberts. You know, he actually asked the Justice Department lawyer to explain how the cases differ.
Counsel, there's considerable overlap, obviously, with the first case. But could you articulate what the significant differences are between your position in this case and the office's position in the prior case?
So the Justice Department lawyer said that the legal principles are the same, but the difference is that in the NRA case, there is a specific coercive threat where the New York regulator actually threatened adverse action in the force of an enforcement against an insurer.
In Murthy, there was no threat at all. There was no threat of adverse action at all. There were just talks about legislative reforms, but they were not connected to any specific instruction. So coercion, in our view, requires a threat of adverse action connected to a specific instruction, such that it's saying, if you don't do X, we will do Y to you.
So was anyone sympathetic to the NRA?
Yeah, there were a few. I mean, justices on both sides of the court's ideological line, you know, asked tough questions of the New York regulator's attorney, Neal Katyal. You know, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, for example, said that the regulator went further than just taking action against the insurers who underwrote and brokered the illegal insurance plans that the NRA had marketed. And Justice Alito at one point accused Katyal of shifting the burden of proof to the NRA. You know, he said that this is a First Amendment case and all the NRA has to do here is show that the state regulator's desire to suppress speech was a motivating factor, not that the regulator would have taken this action regardless of that motivation.
Suppose the allegation was we had a meeting with Ms. Vullo and she pulled out a pistol and she held it to our heads. And she said, I'm going to blow your brains out unless you stop writing insurance for the NRA. That would not be enough to even allege a Bantam Books violation because she might have taken regulatory action for a perfectly legitimate reason.
So there, Alito was referencing the court's 1963 decision in which the justices held that a state commission with no formal regulatory power had violated the First Amendment when it set out to suppress publications through informal sanctions and the threat of legal sanctions.
You know, those two arguments were heard back to back. And the one thing that I was listening for was to see if they were going to be sort of looked through in the same lens, which it did seem like the justices were really looking through it through that Bantam Books, that 1963 case that you talked about. Because I know when I was talking to people ahead of the Murthy argument, they were concerned that, you know, maybe there would be different sort of First Amendment rules for, you know, like newspapers and traditional media and for, you know, different ones for the social media companies. But that did not seem to me how they were thinking about the cases. They really seemed to overlap quite a lot.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There were several references to kind of the earlier case or what we heard earlier in the day. There was also, you know, Justice Alito wasn't the only one to mention the Bantam Books decision. And so, yeah, it did seem like the justices were thinking about both cases together, you know, especially because they were heard on the same day. And actually, in the second argument, it didn't seem quite as clear as in the first argument where they were headed. But I wonder if that's just because it was kind of late in the day and the first argument kind of knocked a little wind out of their sails.
You mean the justices are just like us and they get tired too?
I really wish they'd take a lunch break because I do think some of them might be hungry and they seem to lose a little steam when you hit the second case, especially when it's two big cases like this dealing with the First Amendment.
Well, I think that is going to do it for this week on the podcast.
But tune in next week where we are going to talk about the court's arguments in that big abortion case or abortion related case over the drug mifepristone. So arguments are happening Tuesday. So we'll go through all of those next week.
Until then, you can follow along with all the latest Supreme Court news at news.bloomberglaw.com.
Smart litigators find winning arguments faster with Bloomberg Law. Our market-leading docket coverage has AI-driven search and analytics, customized alerts, and expanded state court coverage. And that's not all. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com for everything you need to win.